Thinking Aloud from the University of Warwick.
Hello and welcome to Thinking Aloud. I'm Stephen Bates, a PhD researcher in the History Department here at Warwick. And with me is Peter Lake, Professor of the History of Christianity at Vanderbilt University in Tennessee. Professor Lake works on post-Reformation English history and is the author of such intriguingly titled books as The Antichrist's Lewd Hat with Professor Michael Questier, and which is a study of the relationship between plays, pamphlets and the pulpit, and The Boxmaker's Revenge, which focused on London's early 17th century Puritans. More recently, he's been working on Shakespeare's history plays, and he's visiting Warwick to present a paper on the origins of this current research subject. Professor Lake, you've obviously worked with some potentially quite ambivalent sources, particularly the plays. Would it be fair to say this contributes to making them your favourite primary source?
Well, sort of, yeah. I think the nice thing about plays, actually, is if you come to them having been an historian, is you can do they're much more sort of labile. Like, they can be read in a number of different ways, and in some ways, I think it's fun to mess about with that. I mean, the danger, of course, is that you make them mean whatever you want them to mean. But it's actually quite nice to sort of... It's not a holiday from doing history, because, I mean, one is trying to use them for historical purposes, but using fictive sources is really... I think it's been extremely interesting. And, I was going to say it's good for me, which may not be true, might be bad for me, but I certainly enjoyed it.
Tell us something about this interest you've got in Parsons.
The project... started with an attempt to sort of with a concern with these Catholic tracts denouncing the Elizabethan regime as a conspiracy of evil council, and then they make consistent and persistent reference to various events in English history, but also classical history, as a sort of archetypes for interpreting contemporary events and trends. You know, like, if you want to know what's happening now, if you want to know what's going to happen next, think about what happened then. And so I started to think about using history plays as a way into ways contemporaries thought about, dealt with, processed the contemporary political circumstances with which they were confronted. And so that's the two projects are entirely bound up with one another. And initially I was going to try and write one book, but I can't. I mean, there's too much stuff. And it's impossible, both in terms of length and also just in terms of too many things going on. Keeping it in one book would just be crazy, really. So I sort of span the history play stuff off into a separate book, and so there's a sense in which what I'm trying to do is read the history plays against a political context which is in part structured by the tracts, and to think about the plays as comments upon or ways of thinking about the same sorts of issues that the tracts are concerned with. Essentially, it's dynastic, it's politics, the prospect of an unsettled succession, the prospect of a succession crisis consequent on the death of the Queen, on a disputed succession. And it's precisely the scenario that the tracts predict will happen when Elizabeth dies, because there's been this evil conspiracy to leave the succession unsettled. And the plays, I think, are about, in some ways, can be taken to be addressing those sorts of anxieties and concerns. So I want to try and the argument then is not so much that I want to say anything particularly original about the plays, it's rather that I want to use the plays to think about the political atmosphere of the period. So that you're in a slightly difficult position, because you look as though you're addressing a literary audience, telling them things they don't know, and that's not exactly what I'm trying to do. There's two problems with that. I'm not trying to do that, so it's a bad idea if people think I am, and also even if you try and do that, they get very upset. And there's no point in doing it. There's no point in upsetting people when that's actually not the the game. I mean, that's not what I'm after. So it is that connection between, a sense of the political ideological context framed by some of these tracts and contemporary concerns with issues of succession, dynastic anxiety, disputed claims, and using the plays as a way to get... Because the thing about the plays, of course, is they're performed before huge audiences for profit. So that what you get then is a sense of stuff that's actually produced to appeal to a very large number of people. And so that in that way, it seems to me that they are a way to get at wider political concerns, sensibilities, the way contemporaries might think about events, in a source that gives you access to a far bigger social media than most, as it were, historical sources do. And it's always struck me as very weird that historians don't use the plays for that purpose. And I think they don't because they're incredibly anxious about the fact that they are fictive and that they're also central to somebody else's discipline. And so you're going to make a fool of yourself because they're not true and you're interested in what's true. And they can be subjected to a number of different readings and you're interested in some ways in finding out what the right reading is. And that's one set of issues. The other issues is that they belong to somebody else and those people have a professional interest in making you look stupid if you talk about them. And so in that sense, I think historians have been peculiarly disinclined to do this sort of interdisciplinary move into the drama, which I think is actually, both weird and unfortunate, because I think it's a real opportunity.
So would you situate this scholarship as kind of more political than cultural history, or do you think that makes it too simplistic given the interdisciplinary?
Well, it's both. I mean, I think, and actually one of my big bugbears is actually that the division between political and cultural history is a very bad thing. And in fact, all cultural histories most of the time seems to me is an opportunity for people to talk about often inherently political subjects with the politics left out. And I think that's a really bad idea, and it produces a lot of very, very bad history. And so it seems to me that you have to do both. I mean, you have to try and do the politics. I mean, you can't do both. I mean, that's the difficulty, of course, is that you either know the political narrative from the sources up, or you don't. People can't be expected to do that while doing something else. But there's a sense in which I think people can be expected to be aware of what the political history is about, and to be very concerned about making sure they don't say things about what are, I think, often inherently political issues, with no real attention to what the political history, the political narrative of the particular period in which they're working is. So in that sense, I think that whole politics culture boundary is a bad thing, and one's probably better off not thinking about it. In other words, not worrying, am I doing cultural history, am I doing political history? And you could say I'm doing political culture, that's okay, but even then, the problem with political culture, it seems to me, is that you can get very, very rapidly abstracted from politics. And once that happens, I think this is just a very bad development. I mean, in some ways, I think this is this is often taken to be a reactionary position. I personally don't think it is reactionary. There's nothing I think particularly reactionary about knowing what happened when and who's trying to do what to who. But it's extraordinary how, I mean, Steve Pinkerton, I just gave this paper in Oxford, in which Steve did all this, classically did all this hilarious, research about, the rude things that social and cultural historians have said about political history since the 60s. And, a number of extraordinarily rude and stupid things have been said about political history since the 60s by cultural and social historians. That it's inherently elitist, that it's just sort of dead white men, we don't know about this, and it's just wrong.
And in that context, we're very interested to know what you regard as your favourite secondary source.
Well, I mean, my favourite history book, if that's what you mean, I suppose, is the Elizabethan Puritan movement, which I think is one of the great books written in the period since the Second World War. And again, the point about that is, it's not ostensibly a political narrative. It's about the Puritan movement. In some ways, Collinson is a religious historian, but there's a sense in which it's absolutely embedded in a very, very densely textured political narrative. And in some ways, it's one of the best political narratives of Elizabeth's reign. I mean, it's partial, there's a lot of stuff it leaves out, because it's concerned with a certain set of concerns around the Puritan movement, and it's not a criticism of it, it's just a fact. But, I mean, I think that's an extraordinary book, right? So, and which I think in many ways, I mean, it's written, the thesis from which it's drawn was written in 57, and the book comes out in 67. And in many ways, I think it prefigures a lot of, the historiographical trends of the next 30, 40 years. I mean, that doesn't trump it, that's what it's doing. It's not a particularly aggressive book, and it's not a particularly methodologically self-conscious book. It's not to say that it's naive, but it doesn't tell you what it's doing all the time, or keep going on about why I'm doing this, or what does it mean that I'm doing this. It doesn't do any of that. But if you look at what it is actually doing, it's really quite extraordinary. And it's a model, again, I think, of the way in which you do political history even when that's not what you're doing.
That's fascinating. Thank you very much, Professor Lake, for giving us your time today. And thank you for listening to Thinking Aloud.
Thinking Aloud, from the University of Warwick.